This is the Senate Labor Committee meeting in hearing room A at 1:00 p.m. on Wednesday, February the 9th, 1977.
In order, first I would like to ask the permission of the committee. OSCA, Oregon State Employees Association, has a request for the introduction of two bills. One would declare that the state merit system law does not apply to public employees whose employment relations are governed by collective bargaining agreement. And the other would prohibit public employer from spending public funds for purpose of employing public employees, lobbying if you please, allows labor organizations ballot in affected election to seek equitable relief. Now, again, thank you. Is there any objection, or I would entertain a motion to...
So moved.
Moved. Is there any objection to the introduction of this bill? Hearing none, is so ordered. First, the first bill we'll hear today is Senate Bill 301. And our first witness is Roy Green with the Workman's Compensation Advisory Committee of Associated Oregon Industries.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Roy Green. I'm here on behalf of Associated Oregon Industries, and I also represent the Workman's Compensation Advisors, Inc. and ESCO Corporation. Speaking in favor of this bill, if you are not familiar with the type of incident this bill covers, I'll be happy to explain that. If you are, then I'll just go ahead and give my reasons why we feel this bill is correct.
Yeah, I wish you'd explain the bill and the need for it, right, and why.
Let's assume that I am a painting contractor, and I am hired to paint a building. And in the painting of the building, one of my employees knocks a can of paint off of a ladder, but does not go down and clean the paint up. He just lets it go, picks up another can, and keeps right on painting. The building owner, then, his employees are working around there, and eventually one of them slips in this paint and is hurt. Of that set of facts, then this employee of the building owner can sue the painting contractor because he was the prime cause of the incident. Now, this is known as a third-party claim, and the painting contractor is the third party and is sued by the employees of the building. Now, at the time that employee of the building receives an amount of third-party recovery, there is a normal distribution of this, which is incidentally is provided for in the law. The first part of it goes to the attorney who represents the claimant. Currently, 25% of the remainder goes to the claimant. The remainder of it goes to the employer, if it's a self-insured employer, or the carrier of the insurance for the employer. Anything that's left over in excess of the cost of the claim then goes back to the workman. Well, the painting contractor then looks at his whole card and says, now wait, under the Oregon Safe Employment Act, you are required, he's talking to the building owner, you are required to maintain the proper amount of housekeeping. Now admittedly, my man dumped the paint off the ladder and didn't get down and clean it up, but none of your people did either. And therefore, you are in some way contributorily negligent. And so therefore, he sues, and what is known as an action over claim, the owner of the building. Now the owner of the building has already paid workman's compensation premiums, and up to a couple of years ago, when we had a case of Kaiser, that was the sole remedy, and we all thought that that was the sole remedy, that the employer would have to pay no other cost. But under this set of facts, the employer then, if he is successfully sued by the third party, must also pay the third party back for all or part of the amount of money that the third party paid in the final arrangement. So he has two liabilities instead of one under that set of facts. One is workman's compensation liability, and then an action over liability. We feel that this is a contrary to the law, which is supposed to be an exclusive remedy. And we are, in that context, are for this bill. We think it's a good bill.
Are there any questions? Doc, do you know of any objection to this bill? And if so, that were any...
As far as I know, Senator, I am not personally aware of any objections to it. I know that the people that I represent are very much for this bill.
Okay, is there any further discussion? If not, thank you, Roy. Next is Bob Kennedy with the Oregon AFL-CIO.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'm Bob Kennedy, president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. We support Senate Bill 301 on the following basis. As an illustration, a worker could sue the manufacturer of a defective machinery that caused him an injury, plus receive his workman's compensation benefits. Now, the manufacturer, when sued, would then rely on his product liability insurance to protect him. The real benefit, as we see it, is to the injured worker's employer, as it would prevent him from paying twice. And if, in fact, the above is true, then we would urge favorable action on Senate Bill 301.
Okay, any questions? If not, thank you. Our next witness is in opposition to the bill is Delbert Johnson with the Oregon Railroad Association.
Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate an opportunity to give you our views on this. It still relates to our industry and the circumstances which we face. I probably should have listed myself as offering an amendment rather than outright opposition because we're concerned with our industry and not industry generally.
I think what we're going to do, and I would appreciate it if there, and I understand your problem, we discussed it already, and there's another industry that has a problem with that. I think that you could meet with Roy Green and probably one member of our committee. I'll have a subcommittee to work and see if we can iron out those problems after this.
We'd appreciate that opportunity
like
very much.
I'd like to work on this.
Yes. Now, in view of that, do you want to hear more from me?
Yes, I want to hear your objections.
All right, basically, in the railroad industry, we have an obligation to provide rail service to the public generally. And over the years, we have accommodated development of industries in the construction of spur tracks, private crossings, these sorts of things that you do to avoid the railroads that are already developed. Being reluctant to take on new liability circumstances, in those instances, we have frequently sought and obtained indemnity agreements from these situations. Let me illustrate how this comes about. Suppose an established industry wants a spur track run through its premises, and this involves absence of adequate lighting, a lot of curvature, basically not the most safe operating conditions. And we say, all right, rather than require you to move some of these buildings and cure all these potential liability problems, if you will give us an indemnity agreement to be responsible for injuries that occur, why, we'll go ahead and give you the railroad service in those circumstances. Now, there are literally hundreds of such agreements in force in the state of Oregon. We've been accumulating them for over a century. And we have gone ahead to operate and accept these liability situations that we would not otherwise have accepted, except for this promise or prospect of indemnification. So we've got a peculiar set of circumstances that's been building for a long, long time. The bill, as you have it drafted, would nullify those agreements and put us in the position of having to pay for the fault of others who have caused injuries. We don't think that you would feel that this would be fair or appropriate. Now, we can give you an amendment which in substance will say that the bill doesn't apply to employers who are not covered by the industrial insurance laws, which of course railroads are not. We are covered by a federal law in which our employees sue us for their injuries rather than an industrial insurance relationship law that you have here. Now, if I said enough so that you understand that we have a very serious problem here and that we simply want our problem taken care of in the process, otherwise I'm sure industry generally knows what their problems are and how they can best meet them, but for us, this would be a very unjust thing to do to us because, as I say, we've accumulated a great body of liability situations which, in dependence upon these indemnity agreements to take them away from us now and this prospect of covering our liabilities in this way would be very damaging to us. Now, if there's any questions I can...
Are there any questions? I think that most committee or committee understand your problem, and if there are no objections, what I'd like to do on this particular bill is get you, Mr. Johnson, and Mr. Harrington from DPNL, and Roy Green, Senator Jernstedt, and myself, if we can find a time to meet and see if we can iron out these problems that both you and DPNL have as far as this bill is concerned. Bob, if you would also... Kennedy, and if you would care to attend, we'd also like to have you.
Thank you very much.
Our next bill is Senate Bill 302.
Would you like to meet at about 7 in the morning?
We usually have 6:30 of meetings in the morning if that's early morning breakfast. That's about the only time that... Senate Bill 302, and our first witness, Bob Kennedy.
Again, Senator, for the record, I'm Bob Kennedy, President of the Oregon AFL-CIO. We in organized labor are very much concerned about the injured worker receiving information as to the benefits and the services to which he is entitled, and also his obligation under ORS 656.001 to 6.5.709. We would very much prefer that this information be relayed to the injured worker by a service coordinator. One of the problems that we see with the bill is that it does not put the responsibility on anyone to notify the board immediately of the injury. We know that in British Columbia, Canada, the doctor has to notify the board within 3 days of the injury. We in organized labor on a voluntary basis are attempting to educate our members about calling on the toll-free line to the board to request a service coordinator should they sustain a serious injury. However, the unrepresented worker is not getting the message at this time, and I'm sure that they incur more injuries than those in shops that have a labor agreement because our members are normally highly safety conscious. We therefore would urge a 2-day period after which the board received notification of an accident to notify the injured worker. Our members are highly concerned and interested in being referred to appropriate programs of physical and vocational rehabilitation should they need such services. And we therefore would urge that the time span would be reasonably soon, but no sooner than medically possible, that the worker could actively participate. On that basis, we'd recommend favorable consideration of Senate Bill 302.
What you're saying, Bob, is that we that after the two-day period, that the doctor would notify within a two-day period, and then...
No, I was...
After the doctor, they received notice of the injury from the doctor, then they'd have 2 days to get to notify the injured workman.
This bill does not address it, or anyway, I don't see that it addresses itself to that particular problem of how the board is notified. It states that within blank days after the date the board receives notification. That's where I feel that the bill is a little deficient. We need some means there to get the board, make something definite, to put the onus on somebody to notify the board immediately, so that the board then could, within 2 days, through a service coordinator or however, then make the notification.
Well, normally the accident would occur at a plant or at the place of employment, and if the man is injured, of course, they're aware of it.
That's
and
true.
I would presume that the board would be notified immediately, and I suppose there are some cases where the man is injured on the job and may not report it at that time. That would be the only case that probably this would apply to, right?
That I'm not sure. Someone else that is more knowledgeable exactly how the system works would have to address that question, but we feel that's what they do in Canada, is once the board is notified that their service coordinator is in contact with the injured worker.
What about sub 2 under section 2? Are you satisfied that within 3 days after the date the board receives notification that an accident has occurred that results in disabled compensable injury, the board shall refer the injured workman to appropriate programs of physical or vocational rehab?
How many days did you say?
How many days are you recommending any days?
Well, we did not recommend a number of days. We're saying that as soon as medically possible.
Is there anyone here from the Workman's Compensation Board? George. George, do you have any idea on that? Would you, as far as the number of days are concerned in this Senate Bill 302? I think that we're going to ask you to testify after Bob is through. So did you have a question here?
I was going to ask him, how he would like the blanks filled in, but
I think
we we've
George,
asked him that already.
George Moore and probably kind of find out how soon that they could take care of this.
Do you have any preference, Mr. Kennedy, about how you want the blanks filled in?
Well, I would prefer 2 days on the first
blank.
But as I say, I'm not being a doctor or knowing some of the other possibilities. Whereas you might say 60 days on one situation, maybe you might need 90 on the next. I don't know, or even maybe lesser than the number of days.
I would think the board would have to notify the doctors that they would want that report immediately from the doctor. I don't know if they have or not, but they should have done it long ago. As notified a doctor, if they have an injured workman, they want to have a report on it immediately. And this could present a problem, but I hope that the board would do this and certainly get to them as quickly as possible.
Well, the thing about this is it all deals with money, both for the employee and the employer. And that's what we're really fighting in this session, is trying to cut the cost now.
Let's have Jack. If there are no further questions, then we'll call on Jack Kalinowski with AGC. Jack, if you have any idea as far as the days are concerned, go ahead.
Fill in the blanks.
As far as filling the blanks, if you have any idea on that, why, we'd be glad to hear from you.
Mr. Chairman, that's an awfully hard question to answer unless you're talking about the kind of disability that's been suffered by the injured worker. And if you'll allow, I'd like to address the committee concerning the issue that the bill raises before we get into that. Mr. Chairman, right around the first, incidentally, I'm Jack Kalinowski with the Associated General Contractors. right around the first of the year, after 18 months of delving into the workman's compensation program in Oregon, our association published this book, which each of the members of the legislature have. The issue that is raised by Senate Bill 302 is described in detail on page 21 of our report under the title Disability Prevention. And without reading the entire page to the committee, and assuming that the committee members have had an opportunity to review this document, I want to comment just on the last paragraph. The committee, that's our committee, strongly recommends that the service coordinator program be expanded. The role of the service coordinator should also be broadened so that it provides as nearly as possible a single, multifaceted contact between the injured worker and the compensation system. And then we go on and talk about this. We recommend that the law require that if the board is not advised that an injured workman has returned to work within 30 days of his injury, that he must be contacted by a service coordinator within the ensuing 7 days. Now, Mr. Chairman, to implement this recommendation, a House bill has been introduced, House Bill 2376, and I would commend to the committee a review of House Bill 2376 before Senate Bill 302 is acted upon by the committee.
What number was that, House Bill?
House Bill 2376. Mr. Chairman, there's one other thing that I want to bring to the committee's attention. Just about a week ago, I was reviewing a Court of Appeals report and saw a case involving the State Accident Insurance Fund as an appellant in the Court of Appeals in a case that's referred to as Haynes, and it's cited as 27 Oregon Court of Appeals 793. And I'd like to review for the benefit of the committee the concern, because this particular instance, because it exhibits so well, I believe, our concern about this issue and why something needs to be done very drastically. In this particular case, this man was injured in 1967 he was working in the woods logging.
What company?
I don't know. The company is not referred to. In 1968, he was given a 22% permanent partial disability determination. In 1969, he started picking brush because he couldn't go back into logging. In 1971, while picking brush, he suffered a second injury. Now, this case came to the Court of Appeals, or was decided by the Court of Appeals on December 20, 1976. This fellow has not worked since 1972. In 1973, he was referred to the Disability Prevention Division of the Workman's Compensation Board. It doesn't say referred by whom. I can't answer that. Who offered their vocational rehabilitation services, but the claimant was not cooperative, so he was therefore found ineligible. Quote, unquote, the Court of Appeals report. In 1974, however, because of his second injury, he was awarded an increase in his disability to a total of 68.6 degrees permanent partial disability determination. Now, the hearings officers, in reviewing this, and the Court of Appeals, paid particular attention to some testimony that was given by specialists. At the hearing, and I'll quote the Court of Appeals report, at the hearing, Mr. Adolph, a vocational expert and psychologist, testified that in his opinion, there was no suitable light sedentary work available for claimant in Lincoln County or the extended region. He also gave claimant a 1 out of 10 rating for motivation to seek work. Another psychologist, Dr. Hickman, who examined claimant on June 24, 1975, wrote, "In a previous report, we raised the question concerning the patient's motivation to return to work. It is now very clear that his lack of motivation is related to his feeling that he is physically incapable of doing any heavy work and to his skepticism regarding the possibility of finding any type of suitable employment for him. He seemed rather willing to consider anything which could be proposed which would be realistic. At this point, one central question seemed to emerge in my own thinking as I explored all reasonable possibilities with this patient. If this man can be returned to work, why hasn't someone or some agency helped him to do so?" And that's the main reason I wanted to read this this Court of Appeals report to you. He goes on and says, "It is understandable that this man should be very concerned about his vocational future as long as he sees no hope of returning to work." And going on, incidentally, the psychologist adds, in effect, he adjusted to his misfortune and accepted it. Now he does not wish to disturb his adjustment as he is afraid to hope." My whole purpose in reading that and giving this testimony is to try to illustrate to the committee and anyone else who might be listening that the horribly long period of time that it takes to get to an injured worker and the injured worker who will be disabled and get him into and out of a rehabilitation program and get him back into the labor force has that kind of effect. It not only is, in my estimation, a very inhumane social problem because of the depressing or deleterious psychological impact on that injured worker, but it is also extremely costly to the employers who in many cases are paying these workers through their workmen's compensation carriers as much as $10,000 a year.
Jack, doesn't Senate Bill 302 speak to what the issue you're
only partially,
to?
Mr. Chairman.
We should have.
That's why I commend to you the House bill for possible incorporation.
You'd want us to incorporate the House bill?
At least the thrust of the House bill as an amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have it? Do you have the amendment to offer now?
I don't have an amendment to offer at this time. I'd be happy to work with your staff or anyone else you direct me to work with.
What would the amendment be? Rich. And come up with the amendment. We'll take it up at a subsequent meeting, probably a work session. I think that George Moore, do you want to offer something on this? We'd kind of like to know what you're doing over there as far as speeding up the service coordinators, and if you got a report on what's being accomplished. And what we discussed a few months ago, and if you could report on that, it would be very helpful to us. What is being done?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name's George Moore, and I'm the employer representative on the Workmen's Compensation Board. With respect to Section 1 of your bill, which addresses itself to the amount of time that the injured worker spends before he is notified of what benefits are available to him. Let me go through a little bit of the time schedule of what happens in a case of an injured worker. The man himself has 30 days in which to report his injury to the employer. And the employer, upon notice or knowledge, means if the employer knows about it the first day, his time starts then. If he doesn't know about it, then he has to wait until it's reported to him by the worker. The employer has 5 days in which to report it to the carrier. man goes to the doctor for treatment, and the doctor has 72 hours after that first visit to send his medical report into the carrier.
Doctor has 72 hours?
72 hours, 3 days. And then the carrier has the responsibility of getting out a first payment of compensation within 14 days after notice to the employer. Now, at the time the carrier sends out that first payment of compensation, he is required to insert with the payment this pamphlet, which is entitled Oregon Benefits for Injured Workers. And that goes to every injured worker who has a disabling injury. And a disabling injury is an injury that incorporates more than just medical treatment. It also incorporates the benefit of time loss. So, addressing paragraph 1 of section 2, this notification to the injured worker, whether he is a union member or whether he works for an open shop, is notified of the benefits he's entitled to under the system. So that's being done. Now, with respect to the second paragraph, and I might add that the Workman's Compensation Board is in complete agreement with the concept of early notification. Nobody wants to accomplish that any more than the Workman's Compensation Board. But let me kind of give you a little overview, and maybe you can see what the problem is, and then let me tell you how the board has attempted to solve that problem. There's someplace around 35 or 40,000 disabling injuries every year. 82% of those, by our statistics, return to work within 90 days.
How many, what percent?
82%. So what we are really addressing ourselves to is that other 12%, or roughly 6,000 workers. 18%, excuse me. 18% that are not returning to work within 90 days and are potentially candidates for vocational rehabilitation.
18% represents how many workers? 2,000?
Roughly 6,000.
6,000, okay.
Months ago, we got together with the carriers and we tried to work out a predictor system. And I'm not even going to attempt to explain to you. It was a tabulation whereby they broke down the injury into its various components, and by on a severity basis from 1 to 10 or whatever the numbers were, I don't know the numbers, they filled out this sheet, and if the total of all these numbers was above a certain level, that was an indication that this man was going to be off work for quite some time, and therefore that was a signal that he should be looked at by service coordinator, referred to the Disability Prevention Center, vocational rehab, or whatever it was, whatever was appropriate. That didn't work. So what we have done now, what we are in the process of doing now, is promulgating a rule whereby we've taken six injuries, the six most predictable injuries wherein the worker will be have the possibility of being extensively disabled, plus occupational diseases. And our rule will say that if the worker has one of these seven things the matter with him, the reporter, the carrier or the employer shall report to the board within 30 days that the man has this problem, and he
Why that long, George, 30 days?
Well, with...
Why don't you know sooner than that?
Well, not... Remember what we're doing. We're... There are 82% of the people. This business of predicting whether a man is has a
this is part of
severely disabling thing outside of the fact of his arms cut off, and this is a maximum. There's no reason.
This is part of the 18% you're alluding to.
Right. This is part of the 18%, and there's some that you'll be able to immediately identify. An amputation, for instance. They will fall into that you won't have any trouble with, or a severe head injury, or a crushing injury, or something like that. If you can immediately identify that, then you don't have to wait the 30 days. But everybody who has one of these six or seven, identifying problems, must be reported in 30 days. Remember, they will be in varying degrees of severity. The very severe ones you'll be able to report earlier, the less severe ones that might even be bordering on being able to go back to work in 90 days, if they have one of these things, 30 days is the maximum in which that you can take to report it to the board. Then all of the others which do not have these seven identifying problems, who have not returned to work within 90 days, would then automatically be reported to the board. So what we would be doing, we'd be catching the whole 18% at the end of 90 days. We'd be catching, and we don't know how many of the people are going to have the seven problems that we identify, but those people will be caught at the 30-day level, which would be at least a step in the right direction, and I think that as a starter, that might be the way to...
How soon will that rule be promulgated?
Well, we operate under the Administrative Procedures Act. It's got to be put up for hearing if requested.
Right. How soon do you expect the hearing?
I'd have to ask the administrators. I don't know.
Do you fellows know?
That's going out by bulletin and will not have to go out by rule. So hopefully it will be out within a month.
It'll be a temporary rule? Or
it is not a temporary rule. It's a bulletin issued in which the insurers will act on. It does not have to be a rule.
Oh, it doesn't have to be.
I see.
Chairman?
Yes, Senator Carson.
I'm somewhat concerned. I thought that's what we were supposed to do 2 years ago. I thought that when we established all this, the whole legislative intent was to get the service coordinator or whatever to the workman. And what's been going on the past 18 months? Have you been honing and refining this, or am I mistaken? I thought we had the same conversation 2 years ago.
We had the conversation in theory 2 years ago, but getting it into practice, we started with... two coordinators, then we went to six and so forth. We're now up to very close to 20. We are asking in our present budget for 34. We were trying to identify what the caseload, for instance, that a service coordinator could comfortably handle and effectively handle. And all of that preliminary, we've just moved into the facility in the latter part of the year, you recall.
Do you think we'd be... Go ahead, Warren.
Go ahead, that's all right.
Would it be better if we put this into legislation rather than... Well, it seems as if your rules are just not, haven't gone into effect, and this has been going on for years. Would it be better for you, as far as you're concerned, if this was just put into the statutes?
Personally, I prefer to do it the least severe way first. I would try the bulletin, then the rule, then the legislation.
But this session may be over by that time, though, George, and that's a problem.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Carson.
To whom are you sending bulletins? Isn't this your responsibility?
Yes.
Where are you... I'm confused. Are you sending bulletins to somebody else telling them you're going to do it? Or
no. This would be the bulletin would go to the carriers and the self-insured employers and the fund and say, this is the procedure we're asking you to follow.
What if they don't follow your procedure?
Well, then the next thing is you go to a rule and put a penalty in, and then if that doesn't work, then you legislate.
Senator Carson?
I can appreciate, George, the concern of trying to predict 24 hours after the injury whether it's going to be one that falls into your category that you have to do the screening, but there's some, it seems to me, let me ask about the amputation. That apparently, from what you said, just falls in by the nature of the injury. Is there any safety valve? That just seems kind of silly to wait 29 days in amputation. That's not going to grow back, right?
No, that's what I said. 30 days is the maximum that you can take before you report it. The obvious one you report is it's just good claims management. Report that as soon as it comes.
Is that also in the bulletin?
Oh, thing? Surely that will be.
Can we get a copy of the bulletin? I think that'd be helpful to me to.
Yes.
Not right now, but
yes.
At your convenience.
Yes.
Is the bulletin prepared?
Staff right now.
Okay, I think that each member of the committee would be interested in that a copy of the bulletin.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Am I correct in staffing means it's been written and it's being circulated among various members of people dealing with it? Is that what staff means?
What does staff mean?
I was confused.
I don't know what's confusing. I don't like buzzwords. I like to know what the heck is going on.
Well, it's in the hands of Disability Prevention Division, who is a responsible division for handling it when it gets the service coordinator. And it was handed to them today.
They are preparing, in other words, preparing the bulletin which will be mailed out. Is that it?
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Right. You know, since back in 1971. And I recall we've looked at the Canadian and Vancouver BC program and get to that man before the blood's dry, and we've pounded that and we've discussed it for years, and it seems that we've made no progress in that time as far as
getting the bulletin staff,
the WCB, and speeding up the process of getting into them. And I would hope that we could do this without legislation. But I think that my feeling is that we need legislation to accomplish this, because it hasn't been accomplished. We've been talking about it for years, George, and it's never been carried through. And this is what disturbs me. I hate to legislate if it's not necessary. I mean, we have enough books or laws in the statutes now, and. But what do you expect us to do? I mean, what would be your answer? What else can we do? What can we expect? You know, I can remember Ed Whelan discussing this way back in 1971, and we'd have to get the board to take some action, reach that injured workman before the blood was dry, and frankly I'm discouraged. I don't know what to do. I don't like to interfere with your agency, but
Mr. Chairman,
it seems to me they've been lax in carrying out the wishes of the legislature in the past.
Mr. Chairman,
do you want to respond to that, George, first?
Well, I think not. I think I.
Okay,
yes. My question, I think, relates to the chairman's question, and that is, what do other states do? Do they have the same kind of process we have in getting out to the injured worker, or do they have some other system that's speedier than ours?
I don't believe so. I believe that we are farther out in front on disability prevention of any state in the nation, and we're just on the threshold.
You see that you can speed this up.
Yes, it can be speeded up.
Are you faster than 2 years ago?
Oh, yes. 2 years ago, uh, I, I'm just going to take a guess that we averaged maybe 24 to 27 months before we got the man in, because under the old program, it was called physical rehabilitation rather than disability prevention. And it was an evaluation. It was a Blue Ribbon evaluation program. The whole concept was changed under the auspices of our medical director, who put together the idea based on the Canadian system. And it's the question of being implemented. Now, there are 125 injured workmen up in that center today, roughly. There are, I don't know how, I haven't got, I didn't bring the figures with me, but there are people in vocational rehabilitation. There are people in all phases of this system. Unfortunately, when we talk about the numbers, and when we talk about the Court of Appeals cases, we're talking about a workman who was injured many years before the concept was even thought of. Mr. Haynes, for instance, I don't know, as I recall, Jack said he was injured in 1968. Well, this whole idea didn't came after 71, because I know I was here at that time. So that fellow, unfortunately, never had the benefit of it. And the longer you wait, the more difficult the case becomes from a motivation standpoint. That's basically what you're looking for.
You're getting to every worker after 90 days, is that what you're saying?
We're getting the information to every disablingly injured worker within 14 days after the employer has been notified by means of this pamphlet. And it's in here, there is a provision written in simple language. Describing all the various benefits and so forth, including the rehabilitation program.
When do you get a service coordinator out to the 18% that really are not going to go back to work very quickly?
Well, under the new rules, under this procedure here, no later than 90 days.
No later than 90 days.
But if they have one of the seven problems that I mentioned, it would be within 30 days. And actually, we get them out virtually as soon as they are referred. Now, they can be referred by their employer, carrier, doctor, lawyer, themselves.
How long is a visit of a service coordinator to one of these people?
Well, it depends. Sometimes the man is so badly injured, the service coordinator contacts his wife. The man can't be seen himself. Sometimes the service coordinator will visit the man in the hospital. Sometimes, but the first thing that the service coordinator has to do before he contacts the man, he's got to contact the doctor and find out if the man is in condition to accept a visit.
Now, does he keep coming back until he can see the man and explain to the man the services that can be offered to him?
Well, he makes the initial visit and explains to the man, pretty much tells the man what's in this pamphlet, what the benefits are that he can expect to receive in the program. He is almost an ombudsman.
What kind of success does he
have? At that stage of the game. And then he becomes a job finder, because the goal of the whole system is to return to work, to as nearly the same kind of work as the man had before he. I think I interrupted your question.
I was just going to ask, with what success, after the contact is made, do you follow through enough to see to it that the man is put on the right direction so he's likely to return to work?
We try to.
And are you getting a lot of them back to work?
Yes, I think there's a pretty. I haven't got the figures with me. I wish we bought the figures. We make a monthly report on this.
Bring those statistics at our next meeting.
I'll do it.
We'd like to know that what the success of the service coordinators, number of people that they... as I recall during the interim period, George, we heard testimony that it took 8 to 19 months for a service coordinator to contact an injured workman. That was at the meeting at the subcommittee of Workman's Comp, of which I was a member of Trade and Economic Development. That was up in the federal building. I think you were there. And it's less than that now, though. It's within 30 days. It was 8 to 19 months.
No, I don't believe average. You see, we're talking averages there. And one of the problems is you still have the Mr. Haineses in the system. Mr. Haines might be one of those men who was injured way back in 1968 and came in through the back door, walked into vocational rehabilitation and asked for their help. And then in an interview with vocational rehabilitation, it was found out that his problems occurred as a result of injury on the job. So vocational rehabilitation referred him to workers' compensation. Now that might be 2 years, 3 years. And it's those kind of numbers that skew the statistics. That's why it's a very difficult figure to ascertain. If we could cut off and start over, then you'd have a more meaningful figure. Then as I say, we went through 6 or 8 months using this predictor system before we found out that it wasn't going to do the job, and we had to find another method of doing it.
Okay, any further questions? If not, did you have a question?
Short one, yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Moore, what kind of cooperation have you been getting from other parts of our society, like the school system? I was thinking back, since I've learned just in the last few years that if you do heavy work, your chances of having a back injury at some time between the ages of 50 and retirement are fairly high if you're doing heavy lifting. It's occurred to me that was a concept that wasn't circulating around when I was in high school, with in a community where a very high percentage of the young, in those days, the young men, Senator Roberts, were going to go into heavy lifting work, and are now in heavy lifting work. And it was never discussed. I never heard it. And I spent many hours on the bus with the team, most of whom are now pulling the green chain and this sort of, or setting shoulders and this kind of work. But they had in their future a back injury. They didn't know that. And I wonder what kind of help you're getting or what kind of work the Workman's Comp Board is doing in getting help in public schools and the other people who might be able to help get that word out so people can try and make some life plan to either avoid the injury or to think of this as something they are going to have to accommodate to someday in their life, this kind of thing.
Well, that type problem is handled by the consultative safety program of the Accident Prevention Division, for instance. Through their training and education people, they consult with schools and training centers and that type, teaching people how to lift. You don't injure your back because of lifting, it's because you are lifting incorrectly that you injure your back. Unless, I mean, you try to pick up something way out of, you know, common sense dictates you shouldn't tackle, but people who do heavy work with their back can be trained to do it so that they have a very small percentage risk of injuring their back. But that's just a question of training and information.
Well, these same people who are working on that, working on getting the public schools to teach people who are going to be doing heavy work that they may have this psychological adjustment to make sometime in their life to a fairly serious injury.
I don't think we've addressed that.
Isn't that indeed one of the biggest problems we have in workman's comp, that people aren't expecting to be put in this sudden change of status and become an invalid, and that some accommodate to it by fighting their way back into the workforce, and others give up, withdraw from the working society in a very broad way, and they give up on themselves as being workers?
That's very true. And now that's addressed in our Disability Prevention Division program. We have psychological people who work with people in psychology in consultation teach them how to combat this depression or whatever it is that that gets them down after they've had an injury of this type.
As far as you know, there's not much being done in the population of people who are eventually going to be at high risk who haven't yet had that injury. That's
I can't answer that. I have not experienced any.
Thank you.
This is my final question. I recall when we were up to the Wilsonville, visit the Wilsonville rehab center last summer, that we talked to Dr. Coombs and John Solomon, and they related, they said it took 16, 17 to 18 months after a man was injured before he entered into the center there. And I was wondering if they are speeding up that process, the board is speeding up that process. How long will it take a man to get there, in there now after he's injured?
This program addresses itself to speeding it up. Now,
you mean this new rule or this bulletin you're
saying? This is part of it. Then we also have brochures addressed to doctors, to employers, to carriers, and to lawyers who were, and to the workman himself, advising him of the facility and what the program is all about, so that we can get encouraging early referrals.
Any further questions? If not, thank you. Chuck Gill, I would appreciate it if you had anything from the insurance standpoint as far as this bill is concerned, and what the problem is that you see it in getting the injured workman back on the job, and what this committee could do as far as this particular bill 302 is concerned. I think you probably speak for the private carriers in that respect, as well as
I'd be glad to speak for the private carriers.
I think the concern is mutual of the private carriers and certainly labor. I think we're all concerned about reaching the injured worker in a timely fashion and doing something that's going to be constructive for him. At the present time, the carriers report all disabling injuries in 21 days, are required to by law. That's in the law. The board also, by bulletin, requires us to report on a continuing basis, on a 90-day cycle at the present time, all disabling injuries. They continue on time loss and they're still being treated, we report to them on a 90-day cycle.
What action does the board take when they receive those reports? Are they just filed away, or are they...
I think you have to ask the board that. They do ask us to fill out and have tried to develop a system to focus in on what the problem cases are. Mr. Commissioner has just spoke to that, and it's a form to fill out, an indicator to pinpoint where the real problems are. I would presume they would take that and get their coordinators after the ones that require a real problem. As far as the injured worker concerned, if it's a man who loses an arm or a leg or a very visible kind of injury, there really isn't much problem with those. the carrier has a responsibility and assumes the responsibility, and I presume all of them get to those kind of people very quickly. And there's programs developed throughout the state right now to handle amputees, people with severe injury, cord injuries, head injuries. But the real problem comes with those subtle injuries that appear initially to be nothing. That the doctor says he might be off work for 2 weeks. The next report you get, well, it'll be another 2 weeks. And then you get a final report, well, he's figuring he needs a little more treatment, another month. And then pretty soon you're 6 months down the line with a rather minor injury, and you could have never spotted it initially. You never could have picked it out because it wasn't very serious. Usually back, and not a traumatic kind of an injury, just leaning over, opening a drawer, or picking up a tool, very subtle thing. Those are the kind of cases that we're talking about. Those are the kind of Haynes cases that we're talking about.
Are those the kind of cases that are costing you the money?
Those are the kind of cases
even more than the amputees? Or
Oh, yes.
Is there?
The motivation that was mentioned a while ago is a very significant factor. And the longer you're off work, the more difficult it is to become motivated. It's very obvious that you remove a person from the work environment for a longer period of time, and it's very difficult to get back. So it's important to begin to focus in on those in a few months to find out that there's an individual that obviously doesn't have a severe injury but continues to be disabled. He needs to be evaluated quickly and kept close to the workforce. There's been a lot of work done in the last number of years about removing people from the workforce for a long period of time. It was initial studies with World War I and then World War II in Korea, where they moved people away from the battlefront, that battle fatigue. They would move those way back into the back into some comfortable area, and they found out that they had a very difficult time getting them recovered. In fact, they became a little worse, and there was a reward to be worse. They didn't have to go back to that horrible place they were. But those that they pulled back just a short distance, very close to their friends and their environment, recovered very rapidly. They didn't move very far away, and they weren't gone for very long. Now, the same thing really applies, the same principle applies when you're away from the workforce and you're 55 years old and you're competing in the hard labor market with those young guys that are just coming out. They're a lot stronger than you, and you have to go climb into the woods. You're getting some compensation, you're getting some sympathy. Your wife is concerned about you, and she really didn't hear that much about you before. There's a lot of benefit to being disabled. You're seeing doctors, and they seem to be sympathetic, and you put a guy in that environment for very long, and unconsciously, he's not malingering, he really feels bad. We need to, I think, implement the program that has been started, and we'd hope that it functions at the Wilsonville Center, that those kinds of people are located early, but it's not, you can't locate them in 30 days because they don't show up that quick. But I'd say within the first 6 months, you've got to pick them out, get them up there, and make some positive decisions. But if you're just going to get them up there and say, well, he's really not cooperative, and he really doesn't want to enter into any program, and he doesn't want to be retrained, so we'll send him back out to his treating doctor and let him cycle through. That really isn't an answer. I think some definitive recommendations have to be made for that individual to test his ability to work and to provide a workplace for him. And the Canadian system does this. They say, we have established that you're capable of working, and we're going to provide you a place to go. And if you don't go there, then your compensation is going to be cut off. But it gives them that sort of a tough alternative.
but it does encourage him to get back to work. If obviously, if there's some physical ailment that he can't do that, that should never occur, but it is a definite kind of a program like that. If he does need retraining, if he does need vocational training, that's a viable alternative, but the first one is to get him back into the work environment close to what he was doing before. The problem is that one of the other problems is that the board has limited authority in that area, that the doctor, if he can find a doctor to continue treating him, he can go back to that doctor and get off work and start being treated all over again.
What can we do about that? What would be your suggestion as far as this case?
Well, I think the board should probably have, and I say the board because I think juries are suspect, and probably rightly so, but the board should have some kind of broad authority, and they do have medical staff to evaluate whether he needs to continue on further treatment, to probably limit the number of doctors that an individual can go to without approval of the board.
Do they have that authority now?
No, I don't think they do. I think there's a free choice of physician, and there's nothing wrong with free choice, I think, or referral from one doctor or another. That's very good. But there are a few cases where people do abuse it and go to a doctor, try to find somebody who will treat them. Now, I'm not saying take anything away from the workman, but I'm saying that sometimes that really doesn't benefit him that much. If he does need treatment, I think maybe the board ought to decide whether he needs to go to another doctor or whether he really needs to get back to work.
Chairman?
Yes, Senator Robbins.
Yes, I'm thinking of a case where an individual had been off work for a long period of time because of an injury which occurred when she dropped some, fell on her, some heavy cooking kettles fell on her and injured her leg, foot, more properly. And obviously she was temporarily, at least, disabled. There were some after effects of that, and she ended up being having a permanent injury to her leg. And she became largely sedentary, and because of being sedentary, started getting to be overweight. And as this occurred, there were resultant further complications, and by the time I first met her, it seemed like she was totally disabled. Now, it seemed to me that in this kind of program, if she were to receive some attention early on, and particularly at the time when she, the injured worker, was notified, for example, that she was no longer going to be eligible for benefits because she was not considered temporarily disabled anymore or disabled by the injury, that there should be some flexibility in having a person helped by this program when in fact they were still disabled, but it was no longer the original injury, it was the compounding injuries, the complications, the fact that now this particular individual I'm talking about, by the way, I'm sure you're familiar with the case,
yes.
Is not regarded, I guess, as being out of the workforce. She's in a wheelchair, but apparently there's a lot of things that a person with an 8th grade education in a wheelchair can do. Nothing that she's done before, but I'm sure that if she had some training that she might be able to work, but apparently she's not eligible for some of the compensation, and she doesn't quite understand the system. Can someone like that, don't you think that they need some direction in terms
of... Well, yes, I do, Senator.
In this case, I think it's complicated by personality.
Well, it is. That is a very complicated case, and yet it's not unusual in a sense that you have a situation like that where there's what appears to be a fairly minor injury that could be taken care of by a certain amount of medical treatment, and in the case of being
sedentary, she puts on a lot of weight, and she's asked, and the doctor says, remove the weight, and she doesn't remove the weight. And so the problem persists, but the problem is not the original injury, but some compounding things. She's also has some other maladies and some hereditary things, some congenital things, and you end up kind of buying the whole thing, but there's nothing you can do as a carrier because she doesn't obey your doctor's order. I think you need to encourage those kind of people to help themselves.
But what, I guess that my question is that at the time a person is cut off from assistance, from financial benefits, that perhaps that might be a good time to say, however, you know, there are some alternatives. Since the, you know, the way to penalize somebody who's got a variety of injuries, or rather, I shouldn't say penalize, although the effect seems to be the same, the way to help them is not to necessarily deprive them of economic benefits while they're still disabled, but to encourage them to seek some kind of rehabilitation at that point in time.
You'd obviously need to help them, and you need to give them incentive. And sometimes one of the incentives is if you don't participate in helping yourself, we can't help you either.
In these kinds of cases, is an individual allowed to avail themselves of those services?
I think that's a classic case that yes, would go into that kind of program. You want to understand that the program we're talking about really hasn't been available up until recently.
I'm aware of that.
But that is just the kind of case that I would think you'd want to get into the program and to get out of the program.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Those are very cases that should only be costing a few hundred dollars and end up costing tens of thousands of dollars. And they're the kind of people that do need help and need it dramatically.
That's exactly what you've been talking about.
Right.
And, I agree. Do we have any more questions,
no.
Senator Roberts? And I was wondering, you've seen Senate Bill 302.
Yes.
Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I think the 2 days that Mr. Kennedy mentioned is fine, although it's indicated that information does go out now as required by the board if the case is disabling. And this, if he says within 2 days after the board receives notification that an accident occurred as a result of a disabling compensable injury, right now it goes out really in 14 days from the date of injury by the carrier. Carrier sends this information out now advising him what his benefits are. So I really, if you want to send it out again by the board, I suppose you can do that. Or if you want the board to send it out in place of the carrier, I suppose you can do that. But to make sure that there's 100-odd carriers and a bunch of self-insurers, it's pretty hard to monitor that everybody sends that information out.
Okay, sub twos of
2 days would be fine because we're in a recording cycle now and they could send it out as soon as they get the information, send out the benefits.
Sub two of section two, do you have any idea as far as the days that they receive notification that the accident has occurred?
Well,
resulting in a compensable injury.
Well,
the most important part of the
I would say that I would say something like 90 days, because within that time frame they receive notice a whole slug of those people are going to be back to work, and to be able to define which one needs to go to programs, I would qualify that the board shall refer the injured workman to appropriate programs for physical and vocational rehabilitation, is to limit that to refer those people that need to go to those programs. Not everybody needs to go to a program.
some people are disabled in its from the injury, and it's going to take a while to recover, but they've got a job ready and waiting for them, and they're, you know, willing to go back, and they're ready to go back, and the employer's going to take them, but to refer only to those people that need the program. 90 days for just a guess. That in that period of time, you ought to be able to evaluate which ones are going to be the problems.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Senator.
Thank you. You mentioned in passing that people that go to Wilsonville shouldn't be allowed just to, not to participate. Could you tell us what is happening there now about in that area? People that come there,
no, sir, I can't. I'm not that familiar with the program. Has just started up. I'm really more. My point of reference is the Canadian system, which we've visited several times, and their program is very definitive. They come up and they expect the people to participate, help themselves. It's kind of a positive attitude when you come in that we're going to help you and we expect you to help yourself. We're going to get you back to work. And it's just that kind of approach. And if somebody refuses to participate to help themselves, they say, well, fine. If that's what you're going to do, then don't expect any help from the system. If you're not going to help yourself, your compensation will be terminated. And they do it more from the standpoint of getting the workers' incentive to get back into the program.
Do you have any ideas about alternative approaches? It's been mentioned before this committee that there some other segment of society should bear some of this load. There seems to be a desire to not have workmen's compensation pay at the high rates that it now pays for people who aren't cooperating or aren't able to cooperate. But there seems to be an unwillingness to put these same people on the public welfare system because of the low, partly at least because of the low benefits there. Do you have any ideas of what to do with an intermediate between those two alternatives?
I would presume what we're really talking about are those people that fall into what we've classified recently as the odd lot category, persons that have other social maladies that have superimposed upon their injury that have created a great burden to the workman's compensation system. It's my personal feeling that that it's difficult for the employers alone to share that total burden of taking care of that segment of society, and there ought to be a delineation between, I think, the responsibility of the employer, and I believe he has a definite responsibility for that work-related injury, and to take care of that in the fullest extent, and incorporate some broad support from the rest of society to take care of those other areas of concern. I suppose primarily that can be done more easily by more clearly defining what the parameters of responsibility are within the workman's compensation law, and to not pick up a lifetime annuity because a person is of a certain age and has a lack of education and can't be retrained. We're talking about probably a definition of permanent total disability, really. I think there needs to be a clarity maybe in that definition.
If we had greater clarity, then we would theoretically at least exclude some people that are now being included.
That's correct.
All right. Now, my question was, do you have ideas about what to do with those people that we would exclude under a new definition other than have them go on the welfare rolls?
I don't have any ideas for a new social program, but I do think there are social programs like welfare and like Social Security that are meant to meet some of those problems. And I would assume that unless you want to start some new program, I would assume that they would be the ones that would pick up the remainder of those kinds of problems.
So you aren't in the group of people who feels that we can't turn these injured workers onto the welfare system, the present welfare system. It surprises me because the people who I've heard voice that sentiment strongly are some of the same people who are critical or have been critical of the welfare system.
I'm not really.
Now I seem to hear them saying that they don't feel that it's right to have an injured workman end up having to live on the low amount of money that you get when you're on welfare. Say a man 55 who still has children at home and a wife, two children might get under $300 a month from the welfare system.
Well, Senator, I don't believe that most of these people would be on the welfare system. Most of the people we're talking about are people very close to retirement age who would be eligible for Social Security. Most of them don't have any children at home. But if they did have children, they're grown and away. Many of them have other pension plans. Many of them have other pension plans that they recover from those pension plans also, or are eligible for disability under Social Security and have that also. Many of them are living very comfortably on the, we're talking about the odd lot category now.
Well, I'm talking, too, about the man with the injured back that you mentioned.
Well,
I suppose many of them would go into the odd lot.
Yes. They would. When the injury is minor, there has to be other factors and I think a lot of them, with other incentives, probably would be capable of going back into the workforce.
Well, what's now akin to a 55-year-old man who still does have children at home and doesn't have another pension plan that he can get to vest at that age and has one of these soft tissue injuries that isn't responding and perhaps he is having secondary gain? And one of the things you didn't mention that I've observed is that there's a lot of guilt that develops, which increases the pain. Guilt over having received the compensation.
Certainly.
What do we do with him?
Well, I suppose you say, whose responsibility is it? There are a lot of other things that happen to the man in his lifetime superimposed on that other people were involved in besides the employer that's superimposed on this. I would assume we all have a responsibility to take care of him if he needs taken care of in a special way. I think it's probably unfair, however, to charge that responsibility solely to the employer. I think the cost burden is dramatic, and I think it's reflected in our costs now. And I'm not saying let's not take care of them and forget about them. I'm sure there are areas that can help the man, but I wish I had all of the good answers, Senator. I don't. I just have a concern that the burden on one segment of our society is probably more than it can bear for very much longer.
So are you proposing that since the one area is getting burdened, which of course is the consumer, another way of saying that is to say it's burdening the employer, therefore it's burdening the consumer because it's passed on.
In many cases, but in many cases not also. In many cases, very difficult for some of the smaller employers to pass that on to the consumer. It's really jeopardizing our workforce in the many areas of our state today.
But it's what you're saying, since this is a burden on the employer, and since we don't know what to do, we should just shift it off from that area and see what happens?
Senator, maybe that sounds simple or cold, but I think for a number of years, that this area of consideration to the degree we're considering today was not brought into the workman's comp system, and that problem wasn't as prevalent. People apparently got by
before, and we're only talking about a few years ago, since the odd lot came into being, that I would presume whatever took care of them before could take care of them again. That is, I'm very good answer, Senator, but...
Well, I think I understand.
Either sink, swim, or die. I think that theory helped a lot of people during the Depression. I mean,
yeah, right.
I didn't hear what you said.
I think that they have to, if a person, as of necessity, they can find something to do if they're able to work. They can find something to do, and I think that we're losing that incentive by allowing them to go on workman's comp and making it a retirement program, as we are. Or probably there'll be cases that you have alluded to, but in my opinion, I don't think they'll be in the majority. I think they'll be in the minority. I think there's many people who can work or find something to do if they want to work.
I think we need to be job-oriented in the program and providing jobs for those people that have minimal capabilities to concentrate in that area.
Are there any further questions?
I'd have one more question to ask you.
Senator Wires.
Has the Workman's Comp Board done any study of unemployment as it relates to the desire to work in this area? We're arguing on one end that these people could find work if they wanted it, and on the other end we have these big statistics about unemployment.
But he's with SAFE, not the Workman's Comp Board.
Okay, SAFE then. Excuse me.
SAFE hasn't done any studies pertaining to unemployment. We're very sensitive about areas where there are opportunities and methods by which could be used to create opportunities. And I personally have some feelings about areas that could be helped to broaden the market for employment for these kinds of people. I think the second injury fund, for one, could be used to a much greater degree to affect jobs for injured worker than is presently being used. I think if it could be used as a tool for the board's coordinators to utilize those funds to supplement a pay to employers of all sizes to create jobs, I think you'd have jobs to put these people back into. For instance, there's a lot of dollars right now that are being used, I think, that really don't create jobs. And there are a lot of employers that are not affected by the second injury law, don't get the benefit of it. There's a multitude of small employers that I think would provide jobs for injured workmen if it was initially subsidized somewhat. I think those funds could be used by the coordinators to create jobs to put these people back into a long-range program. So from that extent, I think there's all kinds of things that can be done in that particular area to provide a marketplace for these people.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Crow, did you have a...
I think I'll pass.
Okay. If there are no further questions, thank you, Chuck. We appreciate your helping us. Yes, did you?
Senator, can I make a brief comment about 302? I didn't sign up.
Okay. Give your name for the record.
For the record, Dave Reiser. I'm an attorney from Albany. My experience with workers' compensation is I was a hearing referee for the Workers' Compensation Board 2 years in 68 to 70, and since that time have been in private practice primarily representing injured workers. 302, everybody agrees that the way to reduce costs is to get to the workman as soon as possible. If this committee could devise a system whereby the service coordinator could be apprised by their employer, the Workman's Compensation Board, within 60 days or 90 days, and every workman that has been off work for 60 or 90 days is contacted by a service coordinator, you would get many of those people back to work much quicker than you do now. Now, the system as it works presently is that service coordinator is notified until the man goes through the Disability Prevention Division in Wilsonville, which, as we know, is 18 months. I do not understand why there cannot be some kind of a system devised between the carriers and the board where the carrier who is paying the time loss tells the board that he has now reached the plateau, whatever it may be, 60 days, 90 days, whatever it may be said. That upon that, the board sends out their service coordinator in that particular area and talks to that man and works with his present employer and get away from this psychology that we're talking about of non-work that is very real and it builds up. I do not see why we have to go through the magic mountain of Wilsonville before this is done. I don't think it's necessary.
What you're saying, it would be possible probably to get that man back on the job, contact the employer and see if there's a job available for him rather than let him go up to Wilsonville and all of this first.
In many times, that's correct, Senator.
Can't the board do that by ruling now if they cared to?
I suppose they could, yeah.
Can't the board do that? Let me direct the question to give your name.
My name is Chester Richardson. I'm a management analyst for the board. First place, all workers do not go to this center. And if they're referred to a service coordinator, the service coordinator will first work with them. If in working with him, he sees that he may need physical treatment before he can get him back to the job, the service coordinator can refer him to the center. So that we do, the service coordinator has many options he can take before he sees a man.
Does the injured workman go through a service coordinator before he ever reaches the center?
In some instances, yes.
But in all instances.
Sometimes a doctor will ask that the man be referred directly to the center. In that case, he would go to the center.
Are those the only two instances?
It could be the doctor, the man himself could ask to go, or the carrier may request the man go to the center.
I see.
The problem that exists, Senator, is that the doctor, in Chuck Gill's example, which is a very average type of case, will, in effect, keep everybody away from that patient for 6 months by keep treating him. Nobody gets near him. My point simply is, if you require the board to have somebody contact that individual in a certain period of time, it must be done, and more is going to get done.
Even though he's seeing a doctor.
There's no reason why that man cannot be talking to a service coordinator and still be treating by a physician. This is what happens in Canada.
Did you hear his statement there? I think it's a good
suggestion. As far as legislation, if you want to legislate like that, all you have to do is require the board to have a service coordinator contact the injured worker within an X amount of days after X amount of days of time loss, not by whatever you may deem to be reasonable, 60, 90 days, whatever. And that workman is going to benefit from that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dave, appreciate it.
Chairman, I have a committee that the other chairman gets very grumpy if I'm not there. I may be excused.
I'll tell you, we still have Senate Bill 303. Who's here on? We have Bob Kenning. We have you here, Dave, on Craig on 303. Are you? Could we set this over? Is it all right with you? We'll set it over to our next meeting. And 304, we have no one signed up for 304. That's quite the fact that we just pass that out right now. So, if there's nothing, is there anything anyone wants to bring or have to say? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, is there going to be further hearing on this bill?
On 302, yes. Jack is going to bring up that amendment, which is House Bill 2376, and we're going to suggest amending that on there. I like Chuck Gill's suggestion on this two days, 90 days. And we'll probably, I would like to see that in incorporated in the bill, and I'd like to, if there are any other ideas as far as the time element is concerned, I'd be glad to.
Well, either from errors of omission or commission, there's an implication that this type of work isn't being done now.
That is right.
The company that I founded has three men, or three persons. That's all they do. And they're talking to the employer before they ever see a service coordinator. That's the job. It's the getting back to work. And what we must remember is that the carrier is better off to get a man back to work than just paying his comp, because that rules lawsuit.
Is SAFE doing that too, Chuck?
Yeah, I think most of the action carriers are doing
it. SAFE and I think probably your company at SAFE, EBI and SAFE, probably the only ones. The rest of them are just collecting the money. And
I'd like to bring the head of our division, our benefit special, down to explain exactly what we do, well, why we do it. I'm sure SAFE has the same thing. So we don't want to put too much emphasis on having the board do certain things which are actually being done by the carriers themselves and the self-insured.
Well, the self-insured are doing a good job, and I agree. But I think the insurance companies are, with the exception of EBI, are doing a very poor job. And this is the reason we need legislation, not because of you, Roy, and your fine company or SAFE, but because of some of the other people you represent. With that, sure.